You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Introducing the Master of Science in Pharmacology program from the University of California, Irvine, UCI. The UCI two-year 100% online degree program is designed for working professionals who are interested in advancing their careers or enhancing their competitiveness for admission to other degree programs. A number of opportunities for master's-level pharmacologists exist in the pharmaceutical industry, biotechnology companies, government agencies, research laboratories, and academic programs. Fall registration is now open. Apply today at sites.uci.edu/mspharmacology to learn more and reserve your seat by June 15th, 2020. That's sites.uci.edu/mspharmacology and reserve your seat today. The deadline is June 15th, 2020.
Pharmacy Podcast Nation, welcome back to another episode of the Pharmacy Podcast. We had a really interesting episode, which was very popular among the listeners. I thank you, listeners. Episode 917 was titled Closing Pharmacy Schools and Predicting the Future of Pharmacy. And really, it was a concept of what's in the best interest of our profession. And part of that is, do we have too many schools of pharmacy that don't focus on the longevity of a pharmacist's career, starting with their education, leading them into a pathway that will assure their success based on the curriculum, based on the pathway, based on the concept of entrepreneurship, which kind of builds into leadership in pharmacy, whether you're a manager, regional manager, you own your own pharmacy, you start your own MTM practice, it really doesn't matter. Just because you take something in school that's based on entrepreneurship does not mean you have to become an entrepreneur, but it does teach you certain skills that is going to impact your life for the rest of your life. I'd like to welcome back George Zorich, who has been a maven of this subject for over 35 years. He's worked as a pharmaceutical executive. He has a book called Entrepreneurs in Pharmacy and Other Leaders. And he founded the company Zed Pharma. Welcome back to the Pharmacy Podcast Nation, George. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Todd. Great to be here today.
So I really enjoyed the interview with you where we talked about, is it necessary to condense, close, improve, advance the schools of pharmacy and what they're teaching our pharmacist beyond the clinical because of the temperature and because of the changes in the healthcare system and what is going to be demanded of our pharmacists 12 months, 18 months, 5 years down the road that really didn't exist 2 years, 5 years, 10 years ago. And I like the fact that you have an interest in providing this to us because, George, you see things in a little bit different light because of your experience of being around as long as you've been, and you've seen things change. So the very first thing that I'd kind of like to ask you, and we'll have in the show notes the first episode George was on. I'll have that so that you guys can click on that link if you didn't listen to that episode. One of our most popular episodes in 2020 so far. But let's ask the first question of George. Are you sure, George, that the pharmacists are using their degree to the level that they plan?
You know, I think that's a great question because the question really should be from an introspective point of view, and the pharmacist is looking in the mirror and saying, am I using my degree to the level that I planned? And if yes, great. And if no, I would simply say, well, do you want to? And what can be your strategy then going forward? But then again, if it's also no and you don't want to, that's okay too, because those jobs are needed in the future too. There'll be all sorts of pharmacy degrees and jobs for those degrees. But for the person that doesn't want to use their degree to the maximum level, let's say, and they don't really care to either, all I can tell them is that there will be less job security in the future then. The future is going to be using that degree to a higher level, the highest level possible, more clinical, less dispensing. Simple as that.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, George. So pharmacists, you know, there's obviously a care involved that they're going to want to help patients on some level, directly, indirectly. Maybe you're going to develop software. Maybe you're going to be a medical science liaison. Maybe you're going to help in research, long-term care pharmacy, a myriad of things. And I'm sure the pharmacy students that chose that pathway for their career wondered, so what salary could I obtain coming right out of college? And my question for you, George, based on what you've seen happen is, are those salaries going up? Are they going down? And what does it mean for the future of the pharmacist student? Someone listening to the show right now, a P2 student, what do you say to that student?
I think the simple answer is it's going to depend where they practice. If they're going to work in a chain store, you can plan on those salaries continuing to go down. A great example is Walgreens is actually hiring people between $65,000 and $80,000 a year to really just sit on the phone and do compliance checks. Everyone knows already, including students, I think, are becoming more and more aware of this, that hours are being cut back at the major chains and the actual headcount is going down at CVS, Walmart, and Walgreens for full-time pharmacists. So if you're in a chain store environment, plan that your salary is going to go down. Independent stores, plan on your salary going down. Hospitals, I don't see anything better than it being flat going forward. And mail order, I would also say they're going down. So that's really not painting a great picture right now. But I think there's all sorts of other areas where salaries will be going up. And you could also make an argument it could be almost unlimited. But pharmacists have to be willing to have a change mentality.
You know, there are pharmacists out there in my inner circles on multiple degrees of being friends, associates, people I trust. And there's a common theme, George, and that is there's always this desire to do something else, to go beyond what they've done, whether that is impacting their community, coaching little league softball, soccer. But then there's the side hustles. And an example of that is Dr. Tony Guerra. Tony Guerra has been a part of the Pharmacy Network for 4 or 5 years now. He does the resident leadership podcast and very successful author, has written more than a dozen books. That side hustle mentality helps you to stay sharp beyond just pharmacy, but how other things that you're passionate about can become other forms of income or could end up becoming your sole source or primary source of income. I'm an absolute, you know, spearhead person of that concept. The Pharmacy Podcast was a side hustle for me and not even a money-making side hustle for the first 5 years from 2009. And really what it's become now, it's my primary source of income. It's what I do full-time. You know, you pharmacists, the pharmacists listening, the pharmacy students listening, understand that the more things that you're doing in the space of healthcare and where your passions are and what you like to do, don't settle for something. Even though you might be taking jobs as experience, that's very good. There's nothing wrong with that. But continue to drive for what you want to do. And one of the things that I'm thinking of, George, which really leads me to my next question is, the passion to be a provider. So many of the pharmacists that are in school right now are wondering, are we ever going to be considered an actual provider from a CMS's point of view? Why aren't pharmacists getting provider status faster?
I think there are a few reasons. And first of all, let's be clear. There is a little bit in drabs and dribbles that's happening. The state of Washington has had it since 2015. Tennessee and Texas have seen the light, and they're legislating it going forward. And I think there's been, in 2020, let's say in the last 6 months, I think CMS and Seema Verma are really starting to get it. And I think we are at the cusp of pharmacists not just getting, you know, of course, Part D coverage of reimbursement for prescriptions, but the Part B of actually consulting on medication as they're getting paid for dispensing. I think that is around the corner. So I think that's exciting. Now, your question really is, why hasn't it occurred faster? And I think part of that, Tony, is that we haven't done a good job as a profession of mobilizing our 300,000 plus licensed pharmacists. We all are in all sorts of different silos, and we are in organizations and professional organizations that have different agendas. Our main agenda ought to be provider status for pharmacists going forward. And anything short of that, I think, is unacceptable. Yeah, I'll even add one thing to it. I would like one of the listeners out there to peg a date in the next 60 to 90 days, and 3% of all the pharmacists, so what would that be, 10,000 pharmacists, would actually march on Washington. We'd go to CMS, we'd say we want to meet with Seema Verma, the head of CMS, and we want change. I think it would have great press. CNN would be there, Fox News, MSNBC, all the major networks. And we could tell the story of how important pharmacy is to society and to healthcare in general, and why that provider status is so important. What do you think of that idea? Can we do it, you think? For every rank and file pharmacist out there, every licensed pharmacist, we need to latch on to the organizations that are trying to make that happen. And I see NCPA and ASCP as really the leaders in making that happen. APHA to some degree also. And I would like to see it across the board, though. It really makes me wonder, should we just have, and this will be a controversial statement, should we just have one pharmacy organization, similar to what all the physicians have with AMA, and then a lot of sister organizations underneath? Should we just have one organization that's really, in essence, a lobbying group in Washington, and all we care about are the top one, two, or three issues in all of pharmacy? Provider status would maybe be number one.
So I don't know if this exists today, but I think the individual organizations are important to drill down into the very specific things that a senior care consultant pharmacist has to play into and pay attention to, including continuing education, the specialty pharmacy, the NASP, the community pharmacy, NCPA, the American Pharmacy Pharmacists Association, APHA. I think they all have their very meaningful and necessary place. What I think I agree with you, George, is all of those organizations collecting all of those membership fees might bump up their membership fees $2 each and throw that all into a collective lobbying bucket to speak to the multitude of issues that are going to impact every pharmacist, 283,000 pharmacists in the country that are active in the United States right now. It's going to impact them. Therein lies where I think the coming together of these major politically driven, very influential organizations need to go, and then allow organizations like myself, like Pharmacy Times, all the other publications to pick up those missions and those stories and push it out. You know, the Pharmacy Podcast Network, George, is exactly that. We wanted a place for all pharmacists who are passionate about messaging, branding, digital media, and of course, podcasting to come somewhere where I can take your voice, literally your voice and your ideas, and push it out through the interwebs and the social media and everything. So, you know, this leads me to an idea at the beginning of what we talked about last time, which is, are we graduating too many residents, too many pharmacists that want to go into residency? Is there too many of them there to flood the market? And if the answer is yes, George, from your opinion, what do they do? The ASHP, American Society of Health System Pharmacists, largest organization for pharmacists in numbers. They have a huge annual event. I was at the annual event. There were thousands of pharmacy resident potentials there that wanted residencies with hospital systems. And there were, like, for every one opportunity, there were like 20 applicants for that one opportunity. So what do the rest of those potential residents do? So are we graduating too many residents?
Definitely. And to me, it's a numbers game. And I'd look at it this way. Let's say we get 14,000 pharmacy graduates per year. And last year, I think it was 5,100 were going to do a residency. And more of them actually wanted to do that. But if I then break down the numbers, if I took all the hospital and ambulatory care pharmacists in America today, there's around 80,000. And if you kind of figure there's a 35-year life cycle, well, then you're going to get about 3,000 retire from hospital and ambulatory care each year. Well, if you're only getting around 3,000 retiring from hospital each year and ambulatory care, yet you have around 5,000 plus residents, there aren't a lot of places for those residents to go. Now, the market might just expand, and there might be all sorts of opportunities for residents, let's say, in primary care pharmacy in the future. But I think we're going to run into a point, Todd, where there are going to be disappointed pharmacy residents out there that really can't find a job. Because the hospital market's going to be saturated. Do you think, I mean, once again, it's a numbers game. All the people that went into hospital pharmacy practice in the last 10, 15, 20 years are probably going to continue to be there for another 10, 15, 20 years. So unless the hospital market is expanding greatly or new jobs are coming about, which I wouldn't doubt, then I think residents have to be careful about spending one or two more years in PGY1, PGY2 residencies and not really having a clear-cut idea what they might do afterwards or where the jobs might be. I think there's a little bit of a warning flag up or a danger flag in my book.
So our schools, you know, I don't know this because I wasn't a pharmacy student, not a pharmacist. I'm a talking head that believes in pharmacists' effectiveness on our healthcare system. And I believe it because I've seen it. I've seen the data. And I'm your biggest fan. But are schools adapting fast enough to the rapidly changing healthcare landscape, including tech positions, artificial intelligence, medical science liaisons? Are the schools adapting fast enough?
No. And that's the short answer. And let's face it, it's challenging to change and adapt, but the schools could do better. They're handcuffed a bit by ACPE and getting students ready for the test for NAPLEX. And there are some schools out there that are simply getting their students ready to take a NAPLEX test and not getting them ready for life. Now, I could make an argument, Todd, and say, look, the pharmacy degree is a starting point. Whatever you do after graduation, that's up to you. We can only do so much. We're going to get you to pass a NAPLEX test and pass your boards. I don't think that's good enough. I think students are paying too much today, and they deserve to learn more about pharmacogenomics. Maybe they deserve to know all the industry jobs out there that are available. a total broad brush. That's why even in my book, half of it, and in Entrepreneurs in Pharmacy and Other Leaders, half of it is ends up being about leaders that took a non-traditional route and did something other than hospital, big box retail, or graduate school / residency. There are so many stories out there, and I don't think we're doing a good job in the schools of talking about all the things you could do. Pharmacogenomics, industry, entrepreneurship, and how that can apply in pharmacy. How do you use MTM to form a sole practice, a group practice, or a side hustle, as you talked about before? MTM should be a place where we're really talking to pharmacy students about how to hang a shingle. What do you think about that?
Well, I agree. I know that if you do have something from a side hustle perspective, it's only going to help you in the remainder of your career. It can only supplement the exposure of you as a healthcare professional and provider, including that delicate and managed exposure to your patients and to our consumers at large. There's a guy named Chris Cozzolina who is works for Nucara Pharmacy out in Iowa. Amazing content developer. He's already making money as a pharmacy student in his value-based driven content development for himself, but also for other pharmacists that want to get into it. This is the type of landscape that you should get used to now and never stop. I don't have just one job. I'm a speaker, podcaster. I sit on a board of a transforming pharmacy buying group. I help other pharmacy students with ideas about their careers. I help other pharmacists come up with creative marketing ideas for what they're doing. RxSafe is an automation system that we've done work with to help market their products and their systems to pharmacy owners in a very trusted manner with evidence-based data that we can show. So, you know, when I look at the landscape, HIMSS, it's the largest healthcare IT organization in the world. It brings in 46,000 participants to either Chicago, Las Vegas, or Orlando, because those are the only places in the United States that are big enough to even host this event. And what I think of is how many pharmacists are showing up at that event. Dr. Richard Waith, who is the host of RX Radio, actually said this on Twitter. Why don't we have more representation of pharmacists at HIMSS? H-I-M-S-S, by the way, if anybody wants to look it up. And when I think of that is, so how do pharmacists get access to patients' electronic health records faster and more effectively through their pharmacy management system? Guess what, guys and gals, you need to be going to HIMSS so that you can be talking with the EHR system providers, which, by the way, that's the sandbox. That's where everybody plays. If you think that you want to advance your career in health system pharmacy, that's where everybody's at.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. Whether it's HIMSS or other areas of technology, healthcare, big data, whether it's insurance, finance, EHR, there's something called Geographic Information Systems, also GIS. I would encourage your listeners to look up a company called ESRI, E-S-R-I, and they focus on geographic information systems. They're working with Walmart on a variety of things already, and that is taking all of, I take it back, Walgreens, not Walmart. They're working with Walgreens to say, here's where you'd want to put up a store. Here's where you'd never want to put up a store. During flu season, here's how we're going to map using CDC data and Walgreens data where all the flu is. And here's how we're going to take all that information, make sure we're getting all the right inventory to the hotspots for flu. They're doing that for coronavirus globally. This is an area that will be hot in the future. I'll give you another example about it, Tony. There's a pharmacist named Jing Wu. And you could reach out to Jing or look her up on like a LinkedIn. It's J-I-N-G, last name's W-U. She's an innovator and a future leader. She decided to get into this company called Esri and get involved in geographic information systems. That's exactly how we need more and more pharmacists thinking about this going forward. These are going to be new areas. And it'll be one of these examples where we can say in 2030, half of the pharmacy jobs are going to be in areas that we don't even know about today. And it's going to be all the things that you might learn at a HIMSS conference or by looking up a company like Esri, E-S-R-I, online, and finding out about those kind of opportunities. That's where the future is going to be for pharmacy. It won't necessarily be in a chain drug store, but there'll be jobs out there. But the future is unlimited in areas that, as I said, we don't even know about right now. So pharmacists have to be well-informed and continually be willing to learn and embrace that disruption that's occurring.
There is a group of pharmacists out there led by a movement known as the Concierge Pharmacist that about 6 years ago, Ken Sternfeld began going into his own primary care office, his primary care physician's offices on a Friday. He called it Pharmacy Fridays. And he did it because he was curious based on a subject that he and the physician came up with in talking about the need to dig down into chronic patients that are especially for diabetes, hypertension. He started doing chart reviews. He never charged the physician anything. And it's now a huge business. They have 40 pharmacists, 40 plus pharmacists in several states that are going into physician offices one day a week, rotating through other physicians' offices in that territory. George, these are becoming full-time jobs. And there's a question that you and I had prefaced before the recording. How can pharmacists become known as primary care pharmacists? And George, in my opinion, this is exactly an example of answering that question. The concierge pharmacist movement, where you become an instrument, you become a professional specialist as the medication experts to these primary care physicians who are looking to build additional value in their practices. And now you rotate between 6, 7, 12 different offices throughout the entire week. This becomes your full-time job. You have an iPad in your hand as you enter. This is not fictional. This is happening right now today. If you're listening to this podcast with George Zorich and I, and you think that you want to tap into several of these opportunities that are out there, I would ask that you reach out to George or myself. I'm easy to find. At Pharmacy Podcast, just about anywhere. Google Pharmacy Podcast Network and you'll find me. George, Zed Pharma, he started that organization, ZEDPharma.com. George, this has been an exciting conversation. And before we go, do you have anything to add before we wrap up this episode?
No, I like what Ken has done with the concierge pharmacy model and the whole idea of pharmacists being primary care pharmacist is really the way it needs to go. Whether it means ambulatory care pharmacists need to start using that moniker and need to start describing it that way, or whether or not the schools start positioning it in that way. I do know that George McKinnon, the dean at the Medical College of Wisconsin, who I think is an innovator in this, he really believes in that primary care pharmacy idea. And that's where we need to go in the future. Anything short of that, and we're selling our profession short.
I agree. Absolutely agree. We're the pharmacy professional, that is pharmacists, people like myself, consultancy, buying trade organizations, wholesalers, the transparent fiduciary driven PBMs. This is our industry. It's time that we lead, that we don't get led by the traditional PBMs and we don't get led by the health systems. let's stop waiting for provider status. You don't have to wait for provider status to be a provider. You are a provider. Pharmacists are the hub of healthcare. I believe that in my heart, and I've seen it, like I said, in the data that's actually proven that statement.
You know, Dan Buffington is one of the entrepreneurs I profiled, and he was one of the early ones to really believe in MTM, but also believe in, I do not need reimbursement or provider status. I am the expert in drugs, just as the cardiologist is an expert in the heart and the nephrologist in the kidneys. People should be willing to pay me whatever is fair and equitable for my expertise in drugs. He's been doing it for 20 plus years and been very successful. Our profession needs to go in that direction as much as anything also.
Absolutely.
We have to quit being afraid of taking that first step. And we also don't necessarily need to wait for provider status, even though I think it is around the corner and it will be such a boon and a benefit to the profession. We don't have to wait for that.
I agree with you, George. Thank you so much for coming back to the Business of Pharmacy podcast sector, really dissecting what the future of pharmacy holds for our pharmacists and for our pharmacy students. And we hope that you're going to be coming back soon.
Well, I hope to. And thanks, Todd. It's been really fun catching up with you. Have a great day. Take care.
We were talking with George Zorich, who is the author of Entrepreneurs in Pharmacy and Other Leaders, talking about the 10 questions all pharmacists and pharmacy students need to ponder. We thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast.